if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We stand for Queen, Country, and Video Games. BRB UK. Worse teeth, better accents.
Hello and welcome to episode 299 of the Big Red Barrel UK podcast. Episode 299, more like episode 299, because Dan isn't here and I am Coleman. Hi, I am hosting this week, and with me as always is Mr. Timothy Kidd of James Hibbs.
Hello, I can't believe Dan bailed us on our last episode of our 200s.
Last episode ever, that's right. Yeah. We are quitting after 299 mm-hmm. episodes. So for those that have serious cases of OCD, we're really sorry. Anyway, so we've got a show. It's me and Tim. So we're going to keep this one light this week, mm-hmm, hopefully. Mm-hmm. He says famous last words.
Oh, I know why Dan's not here.
He's prepping for 300?
Well, it's because, you know, he's moving his house and he's doing it brick by brick, which is silly. Oh. But no. It's because he was scared of us saying house. This was episode 299.
Ah, yes, just 299.
Just 299.
Just 299. 0% finance, repayable to 2 years and ZFS holidays. Anyway, yeah, so we got some, well, we got a headline. I don't know if you've heard about this, Tim, being a fan of the Fallout shelter.
I'm going to say I'm a fan. I did play it literally to completion before it kind of got any extra DLC, and I was kind of like almost glad to see the back of it.
How about lapsed fan?
That sounds like I've got something gone wrong with me.
How about ambivalent player?
Possibly.
How about half-hearted player?
Yeah, I definitely have a love-hate relationship with
okay,
the game,
we'll
I think.
Stick with
Let's
that.
Let's go with that.
How about you are aware of Bethesda's Fallout Shelter?
I have played some Bethesda's.
There you go. So Bethesda, they are suing... they're suing a Westworld game developer.
As
was the fashion at the time. called Behavior Interactive and the publisher, a little company called Warner Brothers.
Little Warner Brothers.
Yeah, now, I don't know if you're aware of the Westworld TV show reboot thing.
They're not my favourite gaming brothers.
The Warner Brothers?
Yeah.
Back to Westworld.
I kind of prefer the Mario Brothers.
So the Westworld... That TV show, they brought out a tie-in video game
yes.
to promote its season 2. And if you look at the trailer, it's very similar looking to Fallout Shelter. Bethesda have accused that Behavior Interactive have stolen assets from Fallout Shelter, of which they were caught out because of a bug that was in the initial code
yes.
for the game.
Now, I was going to say that. That's one of those things. When I first heard about this, I was like, oh, not you as well. Everyone bloody suing everyone for their game is going to get over. I was like, oh, actually, no, this looks more justified than the whole Fortnite being sued thing. It does actually look like they literally stole some of the early code somehow. I don't know if it was an employee leaving and kind of thieved it out the building or you know, exactly how they got a hold of it. But it does look like they used their early code and have literally just reskinned it to make it look a bit different. And I don't know if you looked at screenshots of this, but it did have a bit of the kind of the underground thing, which related to the Westworld kind of, you know, behind the scenes type stuff that you see in the TV series.
Yeah, the whole underground lab type thing.
Yeah,
they're running the running Westworld essentially. It's very similar
yeah.
to the whole style of the bunkers in Fallout.
Yes, and that looked exactly like the bunker, and they'd done it a little bit different by having like an above ground area type thing that was like half or a third, you know, top third of the screen type thing that was above ground and had the kind of the Wild West world going on in the top thing. Yeah, just kind of looking at it, you're like, well, okay, it's similar and you know, I can see how they might get annoyed with it, but I can't really see how they're going to sue. When you actually hear that it's got bugs that, you know, give clues that they actually stole code, that's another thing entirely,
yeah,
and that's justifiable.
It's one particular bug, and I think it's the way it's basically, it shows up in the trailer. It's the way that the foreground blurs when the background's meant to blur. And it's a bug from the game pre-release that Bethesda managed to iron out before the actual release of their app.
Yeah.
So they're claiming they've stolen the code, and it looks pretty likely as well. And they've actually gone as far as to call it a blatant ripoff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the inner technical workings of you know, how they could definitely prove that was the case, and that might be something...
Side-by-side code comparison.
Yeah, but it might be difficult to actually prove in court without, like, you know, having a judge fully aware of... Exactly what this is and exactly how it works.
In similar cases, they are legally obliged to supply the code that was used in their game.
Yeah.
And they literally have an independent developer go through the code side by side and then use that as evidence in court later.
Yes. But it's one of those, like,
It's not like the judge is in court going, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, right. But, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, they don't have to have a judge that has a degree in, like, game design or whatever. But, like, that's something where I could easily see both sides then also bringing in, like, their own witnesses and being an expert witness to say why this is and isn't the case. And I could see that getting a bit messy. And as I said, I could see that being a kind of hard thing to prove in court. But, just playing like slight devil's advocate to it, you could say that if they'd designed the game in a similar manner, even, you know, without stealing any code or anything and designed it from the ground up, that they could have encountered a very similar problem from designing the game in a similar manner, possibly.
Yeah.
We'll have to see, you know, how it comes out in court, etc. But from the language used and from more knowledgeable people than me talking about it, it does seem as though this is a justifiable suing of, and there's enough evidence there to go, no, you actually stole something from us. Mm. This is different to you. Like, because I don't know if anyone knows, I think we've spoken about this before on the show, but you cannot actually protect game mechanics. The only thing you can protect is the actual underlying code that you've written the game with. Is something that you've manufactured yourself, therefore that's something
you contain some ownership on. Well, that's not 100% accurate. I mean, Namco Bandai for years, Namco when they were Namco, they copyrighted the whole thing of putting in mini games into video games, and that lapsed a few years ago.
But that is a slight different thing from a game mechanic, for instance. Like, you cannot say, I was the first one to put a gun in the game, therefore no one else can put guns
right,
in
I
games,
see what
kind
you're
of thing.
Now.
I mean,
okay.
Like, you can protect your intellectual property and the kind of the stuff that goes with that. Like, you can say, we own the Fallout license, and anything with the word Fallout in that looks exactly like this and does things in a similar manner, that's something that you can copyright, but you can't copyright the mechanics of a game. And it's the same in board games as well, basically. You do get games that literally like things off. That's how, and put it in very simplistic terms, you'll see the wooden block puzzle thing on like Amazon and stuff like that. That is literally Jenga, but without the name Jenga. They couldn't put the word Jenga on the box.
No, but they can use the game's mechanics. But that's because that's a pattern that's lapsed over years.
But that's always been the case. Like, that's never been something that they could protect mechanically. It's just the name Jenga that they can protect, basically.
Okay. All right, moving on, we've got a few points of interest. That was the only headline we had this week, really.
Yes.
There was other ones. Didn't really think they were worth mentioning. So anyway, first of all, we've got an announcement from the fellas behind Criterion Games.
Mm-hmm.
They're the founders, Alex Ward and Fiona Sperry. They have announced that a sequel to Danger Zone 2, along with a new title called Dangerous Driving, they will be arriving on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One later this year. Danger Zone 2 will be on the 13th of July, while Dangerous Driving will be released sometime later this winter. And some case surprise, they are driving titles similar to the Burnout franchise.
Yes, now, this is one where, I don't know about you, I always meant to pick up Danger Zone and just never quite got to it. Did it release first on Xbox, or am I imagining that?
I think it was a PC release first and then console simultaneously.
Okay, anyway, but
much like Dangerous Golf or Explosive Golf or something?
Dangerous Golf was...
Dangerous Golf.
Yeah, like, and that got good write-ups as well. I nearly picked up that
at some stage
as well, basically. It got kind of mixed, but...
It had some horrible write-ups, if I remember correctly.
I know, but
a lot of people said it was very boring, and it tripped out their... even though it didn't have VR functionality upon release, it would quite often just randomly launch your Oculus software.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, that is random. But, but yeah, like, okay, right. It's a game that, yeah, I think got mixed reviews and some positive, some negative. But generally, it was something where I was like, okay, I see enough of the positive to think I probably will like this and might pick it up cheap, and just never quite got around to it. similar thing with Danger Zone. I mean, this is one thing I do like to bring up just because it's literally the only time that I've been anywhere close to, you know, a gaming kind of accolade, basically. But I was number two in the world on Burnout 2 Crash Junctions, so I'll trot that one out there again. But I've always been a fan of the Crash Junctions, partly because of that and just generally because I liked them. But to me, like, the Danger Zone one looked a bit like it was set in a sort of test facility type thing.
Yeah.
And it was okay. I did play some of this, and I don't know if I just picked up the game and didn't play much of it, or I think I might have played a demo of it, possibly, if there was a demo.
So the main complaint, well, again, the same problem as Dangerous Golf, was that Danger Zone, it was very one note. It had that one feature, and that feature was a crash, and it was a very linear, basic game to get to that crash. Otherwise, it was a beautiful crash.
But there was something I found a bit even more limited about the fact that it was in the testing. I kind of liked the idea, but
yeah, and this one's set on motorways or highways, yeah, if you're American,
and that appeals to me a bit more just because it is more close to the kind of original formula of the Burnout Crash Junctions as well.
See, I'd be more interested in Dangerous Driving had EA not released a remastered version of Burnout Paradise, which is the one that I wanted, and now I have, so I'm good.
Yeah, see, it's not good. Burnout 2 for me, so...
Yeah, I didn't like Burnout. I didn't like the original Burnout. I liked when the Criterion and the Need for Speed guys teamed up, and they went, let's make an open-world game, and I was well happy with that. And now I have that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm okay.
That's absolutely fine.
And it's like, aged really well.
But for me, yeah, like, I got more into the Crash Junctions than I did the actual Burnout game. I liked Burnout as a game before that, like, even since the original Burnout. But just, yeah, I really got into the Crash Junctions very heavily and really liked that, and, you know, was reasonably good at them.
Tim.
Yeah.
Let's play some Burnout Paradise.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
But I might play some Danger Zone 2 first. But, yeah, I mean, as I said, like, I'm keen on that and more keen on then, like, developing the formula further and stuff like that. And then, yeah, Dangerous Driving does sound like it's, you know, much closer to the Burnout formula. And with no one making a new Burnout and these guys having made the old Burnout, basically, again, like, that's on my radar now, basically. I will keep an eye out on Dangerous Driving and see how that kind of shapes up, basically. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
A couple of updates. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe will now be available to play on Nintendo Labo.
Labo!
Yeah, so if you've got the Variety Kit, which is the $59.99 game, that's the one with the piano and the fishing rod and stuff, you also get the Toy-Con motorbike, which is the motorbike handles, and then you have a little driving game to play. Reminds me a lot of the Fisher-Price toys I had as a kid, little driving games and stuff that looked like half a car kind of thing, with a little LED on the front. You can now plug in your Switch to the Toy-Con, and the Joy-Cons go into the handlebars, I believe, and then you can drive in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. I'm coming to the same realization as I did when they brought out the rubbish Wii plastic steering wheel that no one used. When that came out, I remember going, that looks rubbish, no one's going to use that. And then I was reminded that children exist, and they probably will play it. But I have friends that have kids, I have friends that have younger siblings, and I have played Mario Kart with younger children, and every time they go, no, I'm not playing with the... I don't want to play with the steering wheel. It's rubbish.
Don't play with the stupid steering
wheel. So I don't know if it's going to be the same with the Labo kit, all five people that own it in the UK.
To be fair, the steering wheels were better than the Wii U controller.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's fair.
In some certain situations.
In controlling Mario Kart, at least. I mean, I'd be really interested to see how well Nintendo Labo sold. No, I mean, in most shops I see it in, I haven't really seen the stock dwindle down to the point where it looked like they'd refreshed it or anything kind of thing. And I don't know, it's something where, you know, they kind of pushed it obviously when it first came out. This is the first I've heard of it since then, though. No, yeah. Like, I mean, it's good that they're giving it more support, and one of their like sort of headline games has support for it. I guess that makes it more useful.
Yeah. There's that. Labo Variety Kit, once again, that's the piano and stuff. That's the one that I would want. That's the £60 game. Also, there's the robot kit that's £80 or £90.
Yeah, I mean,
What price do they have to go down to for you to be interested, Tim?
I was going to half suggest that we possibly go halves on it and pick it up.
I'm not putting 30 quid in for a toy.
But then, yeah, that's the thing. We wouldn't be able to like play multiplayer with it at the same time, so it kind of reduces
I don't think anything supports multiplayer yet, except for the little There's ones where you play like little robots
mm.
and you put a Joy-Con in two of the little spider drone type Joy-Con, but they're just a piece of cardboard with little legs yeah. on it, and they vibrate with the functionality. And
it's one of those things where I think if I was a kid, I would have got a lot more out of this. And, you know, you could say that about a lot of Nintendo products.
If I had a kid and they were old enough for this stuff, then I would be quids in on it. Yeah. I'd be straight into this, obviously.
But to me, I think you're only getting the most out of it if you go down the then looking at it as a kind of gateway into doing the whole programming side of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's something that I am semi-interested in, but have already concluded I don't really have the patience or time for. And the other thing that put me off is that a load of people that kind of reviewed it at the time when they got it were like, oh, cool, I got Nintendo Labo. Oh, it's really cool. I'm going to start doing it. Oh, my God, this takes forever.
Oh, I know a lot of people that went the Lego Technics route before when it was in the late 90s programming stages before they went into the programming route. So this stuff can work.
Yeah, as I said, but it was more not so much in the programming side of things I was talking about there, but in the actually physically putting it all together and that taking a bloody long time.
Oh, I love that.
Like,
I miss playing Kinects. Can we get some Kinects? Can we make a big spin wheel?
You don't mean Xbox Kinects.
No, Kinects.
Kinects.
K apostrophe Nex. Kinects.
I remember they seem to do a range of Titanfall toys that I don't know if they fell as flat on their asses.
Those were K blocks, I think. Something similar to that. There wasn't Kinex.
No, it was Kinex. Anyway.
Was that Titanfall?
Yep.
Oh, they did some Titanfall toys. Let's look into this.
I saw them at a toy show and I'm not sure I heard them ever releasing. But anyway.
Ah.
Whether they did or not, I don't know.
You might have ruined Mbongo.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, I like doing Lego and I find that kind of therapeutic and doing that kit stuff. For some reason, this doesn't appeal to me in the same sort of scratching of the itch. I could see me getting quite fed up of putting all the cardboard together. I don't know. Don't know. I'm unsure. We may come back to that, Coleman.
There was Kinect's Titanfall.
There you go.
Yeah. I want to get the big wheel. Let's do the big wheel. That's one me and my brother made.
I remember the big wheel in Titanfall.
Kinect's, it's Kareel, I think.
Kinect's,
Kinect's.
That's it. I'm
it's
putting
Kareel.
My foot down.
Kinect can make anything you can think of.
Oh, that's even worse.
Might have been it's a cool thing about it.
I'm not condoning this anymore, Coleman.
Another update.
That is the strap line I've ever heard of in my life.
Grand Theft Auto. It was the 90s, Tim. Everyone was on something. Ecstasy, probably.
Probably.
What's the 90s drug?
Yeah.
Okay, Grand Theft Auto Online, that is getting what I'm thinking might be the final big themed expansion before Red Dead Redemption 2 comes out. But it's been revealed that they're going to allow players to open nightclubs in a similar vein to you could open businesses and motorcycle gangs and all sorts of things.
So we could Big Red Barrel the club.
Well, I mean, we have Big Red Barrel Incorporated. We have Big Red Barrel, the motorcycle gang, because nobody messes with a motorcycle gang. And we are soon to have a nightclub, probably. I don't know, because like my friends that play GTA Online with me have kind of fallen off GTA Online now, so I don't know.
So you're going to open a club and have no one come, basically.
Yeah, maybe. That sounds like what our nightclub would be like.
Playing Saturday Night Fever on loop.
Yeah. But it's going to have real-life musical acts. I don't know if that's going to be in the same vein as like they did.
Real-life what?
Musical acts.
Musical acts.
Yes. There's four music acts, and I don't know who any of them are, so I didn't write them down.
Right.
Like, one's called Black Madonna, I think.
Okay.
I don't know who these people are. I don't know if it's just their music or if it's they will appear in the game.
I would imagine like they would have models of them in the game.
That's what they did.
Otherwise, it'd just be a soundtrack, no?
Well, that's what they did with GTA 4 when Ricky Gervais was put in the game and Vice City where Phil Collins was in the game.
God, he was in that.
Yeah. There's no confirmed release date yet, but it should be added sometime in July next month. So, yeah, I'll give that a go. I'll report back.
Good.
Probably. It'll be that thing where you open up and goes, good news, you can now open your own nightclub for $1 million. Because that's how they do all these things.
Okay.
I don't know how much I've got. I think I've got $500,000 in
the
bank.
You just go rob a bank and open a nightclub, yeah?
You have to do
I'm fairly sure that's how most nightclubs open in real life anyway.
Well, basically what you do is you either put real money into it or you grind out a bunch of heist missions.
Right.
Or you wait a few months until they release reduce the prices and everything, then you can buy it.
Okay, so just like real life.
Yeah. A few release dates. Dragon Ball FighterZ.
FighterZ.
Bandai Namco has released out of that. It was going to come on the 28th of September to Nintendo Switch.
Good.
Good. I'm looking forward to that. And also on the 28th of September, Limbo and Inside will make their way over to the Nintendo Switch also.
Also good.
Also good. Three good games. And Life is Strange Season 2, that is going to start on the 27th of September. First episode will be coming to PC, Xbox One, and PS4. No Switch.
No Switch.
No Switch.
I don't want no Switch.
The Awesome Adventures of Captain Swift, is it?
Captain Average, I think you're fine.
Captain Average. The Average Adventures of Captain Average. Of Sir Digby Chicken Caesar. That's already out now after some weirdness with it going on the store and coming off the store and going back on the store.
It hokey-cokeyed.
People playing it on my friends list, but nowhere for it to be seen. So I don't know what was going on there. Apparently there's some sound issues with that game as well. But that's available now and it's free if you want to go play that. And it apparently links into Life is Strange 2. So yay. All right, that's all the news and the games we done played. Tim, let's share a game before you go into your... Ooh. Madness of games. You've got a lot of stuff here. What is this? Let's talk about...
Need some content, Coleman.
Let's talk about BlazBlue Cross Tag Battle.
BlazBlue! BlazBlue!
So, I've been getting into my fighting games. I've been talking about this on the show a lot. I think Injustice is the fault. Injustice 2. It's that fault that I've got rekindled this love of fighting games now. So, we've been talking about Street Fighter 5. We've been talking about... Mortal Kombat X, and now we're talking about we've been talking about Dragon Ball FighterZ, which I know you love, Tim.
I don't dislike it. I need some time alone with it.
Need some time alone.
Yeah, just to kind of get to the point where
we could play co-op.
Let's do that. That'll be good because I'd like to get up to the point where I'm competitive with you. Because at the moment, I'm just like, who the hell is this? What the hell is going on? How did he fuse with an earring?
That's like 9 seasons worth of cartoons to watch.
Okay, so we've got a bit of homework to do, is what you're saying.
So, BlazBlue is a series that's evaded me for years. I've had a friend that was big into anime and big into 2D. Like, when 2D fighters turned into Tekken, and I was like, 3D fighters, this is the way forward. I didn't go back to 2D fighters, and I had friends that did, and whenever I went to play them, it seemed like the 3D fighters were slower and easier to grasp. The 2D fighters got harder and faster and insane, and all the moves were ridiculous to do, so I kind of fell out of love with those.
Yeah, I think they catered more to the hardcore audience that really loved that type of game, basically. You know?
And BlazBlue being one of the Japanese type titles, that was definitely one of that era's harder version of the games that are coming out. So I kind of avoided BlazBlue until Cross Tag Battle, which is a weird mishmash of... It's BlazBlue, it's Persona, Persona 4 Fighting. Is that the name of the fighting game, Persona 4?
I don't know, but I thought it was just general Persona characters.
There's another one that's got In Blood, I think. In Blood is another series. And
then, that's the one I know even less about than these ones.
Yeah, and then Ruby, which is a 3D CGI version of an anime that's made by Rooster Teeth, which is really weird because when the game's loading up, it's like BlazBlue, Pine, Persona, Atlas?
Atlas, yeah.
Atlas, and then In Blood, and that's Sega. And then it goes, Ruby, Rooster Teeth Productions. That looks really out of place when looking at the other,
it's like, what?
The other three. Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce that? Because it's R-Y-R-W-B-Y.
Ruby.
Yeah,
it's
Ruby.
Called Ruby.
Only seen it written down before. I've
so it's Ruby, it's Ruby Rose, and W is Whis, and... I don't know all the characters, but the four capitalized letters that spell out Ruby are the first letters of each of the characters'
of the
names.
Main character type thing.
Yeah,
okay.
And the main character is called Ruby as well, so that's where that comes from.
Right.
That's all I know of that. I've tried to watch it. I don't like it very much.
Okay, there you go. Hey.
So, BlazBlue built this just completely on I like fighting games, and I like playing fighting games with you, Tim, so I thought we could give this one a go. It's very similar to Dragon Ball FighterZ, but... in that more harder 2D, faster paced style, rather than lots of flash bang kind of thing.
Yeah, and isn't Dragon Ball was 3 characters per team, and this is 2 characters per team?
Yes,
it's
but
slightly less hectic.
You could change that to 2 if you wanted.
Oh, really? Okay, well,
yeah.
But then, yeah, I find it's less hectic on that in this in that regard, general. I also find it less hectic overall. There wasn't as much over the topness in the terms of the kind of special moves. That may just be because we're not very good at the game. We did capture some footage of this. You can judge that for yourself, basically, in the background, possibly.
I think our main problem with this game was that the tag button isn't a shoulder button. It's the X button, which is traditionally like a kick or a light punch or something. And we kept hitting the X button and just switching characters constantly.
I also found that, like, two of the buttons... I never really got to grips with what the buttons do because they seem to do different things for different characters a lot of the time.
It's That's
like,
how these fighting buttons, games should be.
Yeah, but
There's
these two buttons do, like, similar things, like very similar, if not the exact same move with some characters, and then they'll do completely different moves with other characters sort of thing.
So, from what I got, it was, like, the weaker attack is on a PlayStation controller... It was like square is the lighter attack, triangle is the harder attack, circle is the tag attack, and X is the switch character. Mm. And then every now and then R1 builds up to you can have...
Do your super move.
But your super move is based on different levels of super moves, so you can build up energy to up to level 6 or 5.
I think it was. I think that was max. Well, I don't know. But that also seemed, again, to work differently. Like, it may have... I didn't get to grips really with whether that worked across, like, different characters. Like, the Persona characters all seem to have a persona that came out and kind of assisted them, which added to the hectic.
It was kind of unfair. If you're playing as a Persona, if you had two Persona characters, instead of having a tag team, you had, like, four people.
That, again, made it a little bit more hectic. But I also found that it was good and bad, I thought, that the kind of special moves didn't have that over-the-top nature. And again, it could be something that as we get more used to the characters and get further into the game, we'll get better at actually doing the special moves and stuff like that. That's something that I've always found with most fighting games is something where I think the only real exception, Injustice, being like that you can do them very easily and it's just press these two buttons type thing.
Yeah.
Whereas most other fighting games, you have to get used to the nuances of how that fighting system works and how it builds up and stuff like that. And it did seem to me in this one that they, again, worked differently with different characters and different sets of characters.
It's very arcade versus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, it was good that it wasn't as hectic as, say, Dragon Ball.
Or Marvel or Capcom 3,
Marvel versus
4.
Capcom was going to be the other touch point. But also, in some ways, it felt a bit more sedate. Because of that as well, like, as in, you know, it didn't have the massive, oh right, I need to make a comeback, let's do my special move type thing, you know what I mean? It didn't seem to as helpfully turn the tide of a match, basically. Again, could be something where we just need to get further into the mechanics of the game to actually sort of drill down into it and see how that works. But yeah, like, you played a bit of the game before I kind of came in and we just jumped straight in with some multiplayer.
Yeah, I was doing single player and then we jumped into multiplayer. We'll be putting the multiplayer into this episode on YouTube as well.
That I found, obviously, and that's often the way with fighting games, I found that more difficult to get used to at first. But when I actually found some characters that I liked and got to grips with how they worked, I was definitely enjoying the game more, basically. So, yeah, it's one where I'm like, okay, yeah, I can see the appeal. I want to play a bit more and find more characters that I like and more combos that I like. Because that's the other thing with a tag battle. Like, it's not always just finding two characters you like, but it's finding two characters you like that also complement each other and also will work against the team of people you're playing against.
Yeah.
So there's quite a few variables there and you need to like a bit of time to get used to that and get used to how all of that works, basically.
I'll tell you something. So I played the story mode, which you didn't play. We just played the versus. The story mode, I did show you briefly the, there's like a, when you go into the game, it doesn't go to a menu like you'd expect.
Yes, the little
it goes
TV.
To a hub.
That seems to be something where a lot of Japanese games seem to favour that these days.
I've only seen it twice on this game and on Dragon Ball, and they're almost identical.
Yeah, but they do that a lot on their kind of like that was the same in Everybody's Golf and like a few other sports games I've seen and stuff like that. Like it does seem to be something that is more heavily favoured by Japanese developers from what I've seen generally.
But there was a funny thing with that was the if you were a shibby character and you were walking
you're
up the stairs.
You're a shibby character.
Thank you. You'd walk up the stairs very smoothly, and then when you walk down, the entire screen shakes.
Earthquake!
Earthquake stairs! So I did that a lot.
Hopefully there'll be some replays of that in the actual footage so people can see what we're talking about. Because we kept on going up and down the stairs, just going, earthquake! Every time we came back down.
Yeah, maybe I'll stick that in, right at the very end, post-credits or something. That'll be funny. So it goes to that, and then the nice thing was the single-player sort of story mode, I guess, is in the center of the screen, like right where you spawn.
Yeah.
Whereas in Dragon Ball, you have to go find it, and it's a bit of a pain in the butt. So like, where's over there?
What's find over there? Your game.
Until you find out there's a quick menu. If you just hit a button, a regular menu pops up. Why couldn't I just use that? So the story mode, it's the whole, there's a character sliding onto the screen, there's static, no movement, text boxes in the corner with narration, and it's the legit narrations from different video games and anime and things. So that's quite nice, but not for me. It's a bit too it's a bit too visual novel for me. I'm not into that. Really.
A lot of fighting games do that, fair. It's not something that I'm against it.
I understand it as well, because it's a shame when you look at Dragon Ball FighterZ, and I'm going to keep going back to this because they are quite similar, but one's the 3D 2D game and one's the 3D 3D game.
Yeah.
One's the 2D 2D game.
2D 2D.
Yeah, 2D 2D game. And Rudy 2D game. And Dragon Ball has some of the most beautiful cutscenes you've ever seen in a fighting game that are made to look like an anime, but they're rendered in 3D and it's beautiful and all this kind of stuff. With BlazBlue, it is that 2D anime sprite style. That's harder to render, harder to anime. It takes a longer
harder
time.
Harder to anime.
It's harder. Dickhead. It's harder to animate than it would be a 3D model. We've spoken to the dynamics of that in the past. But yeah, I understand it. But at the same time, it's something I don't particularly like. Plus, I'm not a big fan of the English voice acting in some of these things as well. I don't think it's particularly that good. You know, except for Ruby, which is a thing that's made in America that's then ported out to other countries. The other things are Japanese things that are then ported out to the UK and the US. Ruby has decent voice acting, but it's people that I don't really want to hear in an anime.
See, I think that's one thing where your first foray into modern fighting games being Injustice 2 kind of spoiled you.
Well, that's my rekindling.
Yeah, okay, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, getting back in at that stage, like, for me, they are the pinnacle of story modes in fighting games, basically. Mm. They have done some of the best story modes in fighting games of recent years.
Oh, yeah, the first Injustice is amazing.
Yeah, and not just from an actual story and justifying the reason why you're actually fighting someone type thing, but also just from the mechanics of going through it and the presentation and style of it is top notch. Mm. Whereas in most fighting games, that has never been the case. Even one of the high points of most people would see is the high point of fighting games, Street Fighter.
Yeah,
like they do the presentation in the similar manner to you're sort of talking about as well. So I don't think that's something that people that are fans of this game really care about.
Well, it's not something it's something that I would say that it's rekindled my love of fighting. I've always had one foot in fighting games.
When
I stepped away, like Tekken series, I've always been. I've played every version of Tekken there is, and I've always kept up with the story of that. And, fighting games seem to do that thing. Now the new story thing to do with fighting games is you switch characters all the way through to get a feel for all the characters that are in the game.
Whereas
traditionally it'd be you pick a character, you fight a bunch of people, you get an intro and an outro, and that's about it, really.
Yeah, and for me that's the arcade mode, and you should have an arcade mode in a fighting game as well.
I think you should be able to unlock characters. That's another problem with this one. You don't really unlock characters.
Yeah, I hate that, because that's something that's been taken away not only by the structure of a lot of fighting games, but also by the fact that most extra characters are made available through a DLC or just bonus things that you can buy. And even the one level down from that, the extra costumes, that's something that's been extracted from the game and isn't sort of
this one's weird though, because I bought the deluxe version that comes with all the character pass and all that kind of stuff, so all the new DLC I can download straight away. Don't know why I went for it, but I think I looked at the amount of characters that are available on one and then on the other and went, I want more characters, and you can play as a cat.
There you go.
And it seems all the characters are just BlazBlue characters. and nothing. I think it's like 4 BlazBlue characters you get when you download this pack.
But there are a lot more BlazBlue characters in the game in general, though. And look, it's called BlazBlue. Like, you should probably expect that.
I'm hoping they kind of do the new trend of fighting games, which is bring things in from other franchises going forward. Because the whole setup of this game is... It's kind of like the what I was trying to explain to you before, Tim. Mm. It's the JoJo episode of the X-Men 1992 animated series, where there's an entity in space or another dimension that brings all these characters in from different worlds and makes them fight, and whoever wins gets to leave.
Did you say JoJo?
Yeah. Was it JoJo, the name of the alien with the spider legs? And
I don't know. JoJo's just making me think of the whole, like, J-Stars kind of fighting game thing.
Like J-Stars. That was really bad. This is better than J-Stars.
Okay.
So that's kind of the premise. All these characters get mixed together. So there could be DLC, you know, I'm hoping there's DLC where they bring characters in from other animes or other anime-style fighting games and mash them into this universe. That'd be a cool thing. So we've seen it with Tekken, where they brought in Geese Howard, and they brought in, what's his name from Final Fantasy 15. It would be cool to see that.
That is the kind of thing with this game, that it is a mashup of different universes. Be nice if they added a whole nother universe or something.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But yeah. I have to say, I enjoyed my time with this. I am possibly more keen on the fact that we're going to play some Soul Calibur this week and report back on that to next week. So that'll be quite cool. That's one of my main
To say we're doing that, Tim?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Let's say we are. It's been played by other people. Like, previously, there's been other press events. So I think we're okay. We're good.
All right, what do you want to talk about?
I think I'll go with the quicker one first, basically. So I don't know if you've had a chance to play it, but the Captain's Toad's Treasure Tracker demo is available on Switch.
And I did.
I believe it's on 3DS as well.
It was very much like the Wii U version of the game.
Yeah, I never played the Wii U version of the game. It's a shame Dan's not here, because he loves it when I say I admired this series from afar. But
okay, it was very much like the minigames within Mario 3D Land.
Right, I heard that. Never played those.
So good.
Like, you've once again done what most of the universe does in gaming world and assumed that I played a Mario game.
It was so good. Yeah, cat costumes.
I have no idea.
Where's the port of that to the Switch?
Okay, how did it work in Super Mario? Was it Super Mario World or Super Mario Land? Which one?
I think Land is the 3DS version. World is the Wii U version. But you had regular kind of 3D platforming, and then... You would find Captain Toad and then get a Captain Toad level. Then they basically turned those levels into a new game of its own called Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker. Sold it for £35, I think, £25,
£35. Yeah, something like that.
And no one played it. And then they took all those levels and then added the levels that were taken from 3D World as well. And then they've mashed them into one game, and then they've released it on the Switch. Or they're releasing it on the Switch.
Well, no, I heard slightly differently, because I heard that they'd taken levels out that was in the Wii U version.
Oh.
They'd taken the levels out that had elements of Super Mario Land World, whatever it was, and they've added back in worlds that are based on Super Mario Odyssey.
Gotcha.
That's the case.
Because Captain Toad is in Odyssey, but he doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
He's just there.
He's just like, around.
Hey, I've been exploring and I found this star. Here's a star.
But yeah, other than those levels hokey-cokeying their way around, that this is basically a port of the Wii U game, polished up real nice to look a bit better on the docked version of the Switch, basically.
Right.
Apparently the 3DS version is also very nice looking and really well done for a 3DS game. Slight backhanded compliment. But generally, yeah, I'd heard that that is the case with this one. I can confirm that it does look really nice on the Switch version, basically.
Yeah, I can confirm that too.
Again, it's not a full, well, I say full price in inverted commas, but I think the retail version's being sold for like £40.
Yeah.
Rather than the £60 that most...
It's had a markup since its Wii U version.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair enough. Like, Brexit. Blame Brexit. But basically, yeah, like, I think they give you three... I can't remember if it was three levels and then a boss fight, or the three levels include one of the boss fights. But basically, for anyone that hasn't seen it, it's a kind of pathfinding sort of puzzle game where you're able to rotate the environment to get different views of where you should go to pick up all the bonuses within
it's
the environment.
It's an exploratory puzzle game with 3D platforming elements.
Yeah, but it's quite light on the platforming. It's more about solving the path of where you're going than it is actually doing
It's kind of a good... It's taking mobile video game mechanics and using them on the home console is what I thought when I played the original Wii U version, because it does that whole 3-star system.
Yes.
And you can go for a game and you beat the game. It does the same in Overcooked as well.
Mm.
You can beat a level and it will give you a star rating. And the idea is you can just quite easily complete the game with the star rating, 1-star rating on all the levels, or you could get 3 stars and, you know, that's great. But I think in this, it does the same as Overcooked, whereas you have to have more stars to unlock new levels.
Yeah.
So if you have a 1-star on everything, you may not get to the end because you've only got 1-star on everything. If you've got 2 stars on things and 3 stars on things, you're going to get more stars to unlock more levels.
Thanks for overly explaining that mechanic.
That's okay.
But basically, I mean, like, it's one of those things where I quite enjoyed the kind of the different levels. And I did actually go back, and when I'd got like a 1 or 2 star, I went back and actually made it so that, you know, I got the whole 3 stars before progressing. And I kind of enjoyed those levels. Where I kind of checked out a bit, and where this fell down to a rental or wait for a lower price point rather than a purchase day one, is the boss battle for me. That felt more like, okay, now I'm just playing a kind of platforming Mario-style game. Like, it was a thing where it's got, like... I think it was a dragon, basically.
Yeah.
That was in a pit of lava.
It's a lava dragon.
Dragons don't...
Those are from... I think those are actually in 3D World.
That's fine. But then, like...
Well, technically, I think they're in Super Mario World from the Super Nintendo as well.
But yeah, again, you're kind of just, like, trying to go through the path, basically, and it's firing stuff at you, and you've just got to wait. And I found that quite...
Tedious.
Tediously dull, to be honest. Like, I was just like, okay, if that's the boss fight that you're showing off as, you know... as the one that's here, then I'm not sure I'm going to care for any of the boss fights. To the point where, like, I got 90% of the way through the boss fight with no trouble and then died and went, I can't really be bothered to go back and play that boss fight. Thanks. I guess I'm done. So as I said, like, I might keep an eye on it. And as I said, I might rent it or I might pick it up when it's cheap. But I'm not rushing to buy the game now, because... the boss battle was the thing that was the kind of nail in the coffin, but the rest of it was, like, passable and fine, but not something I particularly care for.
Okay. Well, that's a demo, so we're going to cut it there and probably report back if we actually end up picking this game. I might pick up this game. I did actually enjoy Captain Toad a lot. I don't know if 40 quid's enough, but, you know...
Yeah.
30, I think, is my max on that game. I may look for a deal. That might be my first cartridge game.
Oh, okay.
We may
look
see.
For a deal and then sell it on if you get bored.
Coleman's Bazaar deals.
That's good, Coleman, because you can also lend it to me.
Yeah, all right.
I'll chuck in a fiver. There you go.
Play all my digital games on the PlayStation anyway.
Yeah, well, there you go.
All right, come on, Lumines. Let's do this.
I was so excited for the release of this game. I actually, like, tweeted out about the fact that, like, because basically it showed up on the store and I've been waiting for it for a while and it said the 26th for forever. You couldn't pre-order it, so I couldn't get it done. And everyone that knows, I do Tabletop Tuesday on a Tuesday.
Never heard of it.
I couldn't play it on the Tuesday on the day it was releasing. But then I got home on Monday and just went to the store to try and actually pre-order it, which wasn't available. I'm not sure why that is. With some games on the eShop, you can and can't pre-order. I don't quite understand that. But I went to pre-order it and it was like released on the 25th. I was like, oh my God. So I tweeted out about the fact it was released on the 25th, but not actually available to buy or pre-order.
This is all very interesting. How are you finding the game?
Well, I was just saying, I got a tweet back from Enhance, the people that are releasing the game, and they were like, it comes out at such and such a time, Central Eastern European. I had to work out. But anyway, it came out at 11 o'clock rather than 12. So I got an hour's play in before, well, hour and a half plus before I went to bed, basically. So yeah, I was really pleased that I got a little taster of this beforehand. And I've played a bit more last night and today as well. And I don't know about, like, we've mispronounced the name of this game more than any other game that we've probably pronounced, because we're still not entirely sure. I think it's Lumines Remastered. I'm going to go with that. But we always go with Lumines, whatever, however you pronounce it. But yeah, I absolutely love this game. It's one of those ones where I played way too much of it on the PSP. I think I also played a lot of it on the Vita, because it's really suitable for handheld. And then I think I also bought the 360 version, possibly. I definitely bought it on Xbox Live Arcade, I think, at some point. But yeah, this is the remastered edition for and I bought the Switch version. I kind of felt like I was cheating on PlayStation to do so. But
apparently you're rewarded with longer loading times for the with the Switch version.
Yeah, the loading times are a bit, but they're not horrific. Like, they're okay. Like, you know, it's like, oh, this is taking a while. Okay, there we go. Kind of, it's not like, you know, not massively bad. But I actually might pick up the PS4 version as well, because the PS4 version comes with the soundtrack, which I love the music in this game, and also comes with a dynamic theme as well. So I might actually end up buying two versions of this game. But yeah, like, this is a remastered game. Like, they've kind of cleaned up, and the kind of menus look like nice and crisp and fresh, and they kind of added everything to it. And there's like multiple modes in the game. It's kind of a mashup of the first and second games in turn. I think, I don't know about you, I find it very difficult to keep track of which skins and, you know, which tunes were in which version of the game. I can't really remember which one was which. But I think from, yeah, what I've read up and what I've seen, that they're kind of a mismatch or you know, a kind of adding together of some of those tunes. Wasn't there, and I may have just not come across it yet, but wasn't there a the Chemical Brothers tune in the second game?
I don't know. I remember there was Chemical Brothers in Wipeout.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. But I'm not sure if that's made it, and like whether some of the, you know, the kind of bigger licenses have got in. I don't know if that is or isn't the case. As I said, I may have just not unlocked it, or I may have unlocked it.
From what
it, not
I understand, the more Lumines titles that came out, they started bringing in actual like licensed tunes, and this one is a remaster of the first game.
Yeah, but it's got some mechanics of the second game, and I think it has some skins from the second game as well. Okay. Could be wrong on that one, but anyway. But for anyone that doesn't know, Lumines is a kind of music-driven puzzle game. It's kind of a bit in the kind of same mold as Columns. One of the things I didn't actually realize is basically, and I'm going to mispronounce his name, but Tesori Mitsuguchi.
Perfect. Who's
I probably messed up. But like, he was the lead developer or the project manager or whatever on Res Infinite more recently, and the original version of this game. And what was the other one he did as well that was kind of music based?
I don't know.
I'm forgetting. There was another one. Oh, Child of Eden.
Oh, Child of Eden. That,
yeah.
The Kinect game,
yes,
that no one liked.
Well, no, but it was liked.
I'll tell you again. The Kinect game that no one bought.
Yes,
and then it came to PlayStation Move and no one bought.
Well, yeah. But it was a good game. Anyway, one thing I didn't realize is Lumines came about because he wanted to make a Tetris-based music game. He couldn't get the license for it at the time, so that's why Lumines was born. And that's really interesting now, just because Tetris Effect is now coming out, and he's now getting to realize that vision, which I think is really interesting.
That's cool.
But yeah, also, I listened to some more of the music, some more of the tunes from Tetris Effect, and oh my god, I'm in love with that stuff. But anyway,
Tim, about the game?
Right. Yes.
You've had 10 minutes of talking about an intro to the game not the game.
But
please talk about the game.
It's a puzzle-based music game. Like, you're clearing blocks of 2x2 like colors that you match up. There's always like sets of two different colors that make up a skin that goes along with the music. That kind of, like, there's a different signature, like, beat to it that basically there's a sweeping timeline that goes from left to right, and that clears those blocks as you form them together in time with the beat of the music as well, basically. And different tunes are like move that timeline at different speeds, which the slower speeds are actually quite good at like helping you to build things, but it can also mean that it's more difficult because it's slower at clearing stuff. So there's a kind of risk reward to going into the different things. And basically, one of the things I've always liked about this game over and above other puzzle games is the fact that you do unlock more skins as you go through the game. And basically, it mixes the tune and the background. Like, well, it sort of mixes the tune from one to the other as you're transitioning, and then the backgrounds kind of phase from one to the other as well, basically. And that changes the colors of the blocks you're using and all that type of stuff. And yeah, like that, as I said, that's one of the things I really like about this game over and above other puzzle games, because it's really kind of like, it feels really rewarding in the same way as we were talking about fighting games unlocking new characters. It feels really rewarding to unlock a new tune and to unlock the skin that goes with it as well. And that's one thing that I think this game has over and above other puzzle games. I kind of lamented in the past about like puzzle games not being what like being ruined by the kind of mobile invasion of, like, they're very suitable for mobile platforms, but then they're ruined by the whole microtransaction mechanic within them, basically. And this for me was one of the last great games, and it's surprising how old it is. It's like 13-14 years old now, but depending on what territory you're in. But yeah, this is like, for me, this is probably one of my top three, probably my second favorite puzzle game of all time, behind Tetris, and then Columns probably coming in behind this, basically. And yeah, it's a really, this version is a really well done version. They've got like the challenge mode, which is the kind of classic, like, go through all the different levels and unlock different skins as you go. The skin edit, which I believe was a thing that was added from the second game, is basically like being able to make your own playlist of different the different skins. And like, so you can actually put, I think it's up to 10 of them that you can put in a different random order of the order you decide, which is quite nice and good to fiddle with. But I don't know, I always find it quite distracting to go from one to the other sometimes, and if it's a transition you're not used to, that can be difficult. So it's fine as long as you lock down ones that you like transitioning between. Then they've also got some other modes in there, the like time attack mode, which is always a classic easy one. I find with this game it's really difficult to play in short bursts, and so the time attack's really welcome because it actually limits how the playtime that you can play in. Like, the shortest one's like 60 seconds, and it's literally just you've got 60 seconds to try and get the highest score you can. I don't know how some of the people have got some of the scores they have online on this, though. It's insane, but hey. The puzzle modes there, that was always, I think that was one that was added in 2, but that's something that I think it's okay. It's not my favorite addition to the game. It's where you've basically got to make different shapes from the pieces you're doing. It's a nice extra mode, but it's not my favorite thing. There's the mission mode, which are quite cool, but a bit linear in terms of you can easily get stuck on one of them. But at least it allows you to jump between them in this. I'm not sure if that was the case previously, but you can just, if you get stuck on one mission, you can just choose the mission after it, which is quite good. But that's where you've got like different objective-based things to do, like leave this line down the middle or clear all the blocks in just 2 turns, or yeah, like different stuff like that was quite good. Then there's the versus mode, which you can do versus the computer or versus a human opponent. The versus mode has always been like a really nice addition. It works on just like one screen where you've got a line that kind of gets pushed back and forth between the two players depending on how well you're doing. And if you get it like shoved all the way over, it gets much harder for the person on the other side of that line to fit stuff in, and therefore whenever someone gets like tops out like they would normally, it ends in your favor, basically. And yeah, like, that works really well. Again, a lot of people complained that the two-player battle isn't available online. That doesn't bother me too much, to be honest. I don't really care. It's got the local co-op, which is quite nice to have. I guess it would have been nice to be able to play against your friends at least, but I guess that might be something that may have pushed the price up quite a lot, because it's well priced. I think the Switch version was a bit more expensive at $13.49, and I think the PlayStation version is £12. And so, I haven't mentioned the Xbox version, which is available as well, and I believe that's the same price as the PS4.
So why
version.
The extra price for the Switch? Is that just for the ability to take it out and about?
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I'm not sure if that's something to do with the store, probably. Like, because from having spoken to a few devs in the past, most price differences between, like, different versions is usually a reflection of how much they've had to pay to get it on the store. So I don't know if that's the case. But again, I got, like, you know, like 50p off that price for having some gold coins in my thing anyway. So I wasn't too bothered. And as I said, it feels like such a natural fit for the Switch to be a kind of, a portable version that I can also play at home anyway. That I was so excited to buy this game, I didn't really care at the time, to be honest. But yeah, the visuals have been polished up a bit. That's not necessarily the most important thing, but it looks nice on the screen and looks good. I think possibly more important with this game is the fact that the sounds got a boost up, at least from the old PSP version, and I presume it's got a boost since the Vita as well. You know, got a bit more processing grunt behind the Switch, and therefore the music stuff, but the fidelity of the audio is apparently higher and you know, is a bit better. And it's one of those games that really works nicely with a set of headphones as well. So, yeah, that's definitely something worth going with. In case you hadn't noticed from what I'm saying, I probably can't recommend this high enough.
Like, I didn't think you liked it.
Yeah, as I said, one of my favourite sort of puzzle games. And puzzle games are possibly one of my favourite sort of games of all time. I've wasted countless hours on this. It's one of those games where I love it, but I don't know how good I am at it, kind of thing. Like, when I've played a few other people at, like, two-player that haven't played it that much, I tend to kick their ass, but I think I'd get my ass kicked online, and judging by the kind of scoreboards of what people have done, I'm like, that's insane! How have you got that much of a score, type of thing? But, yeah, like, as I said, I may not be great at it, but it's a game I really love, so take that with a slight pinch of salt, possibly, but if you've ever played Lumines, this is pretty much the definitive version of the game, so definitely worth picking up.
Good. All right, and with that, that is the end of the show, but not before Tim tells us what the hell is going on at Tabletop Tuesday next week.
Tabletop Tuesday this week, we have a real doozy, and I know I've been saying that a lot lately, but literally, go and look at the average score of the games that we've been having in the last couple of months, and we've had some bangers, and this is right up there with the best of them. This is a sequel to one of my favorite, well, it's a standalone sequel expansion to one of my favorite games of all time. It's Star Realms Colony Wars, and anyone that hasn't played any of the Star Realm games before, if you can't join us at Loading, by the way, there's a very good app version of this, and you should probably download it because it was
an app version of Tabletop Tuesday.
Teach you it for free. No, of Star Realms. It's a great deck building game. It's a really good two-player game. It's one of my go-to recommendations for, like, hardcore gamers that want to play a really good two-player game. It's a game I absolutely love. It's really, really good. Really good little deck building game. Quite, like, it's in-depth what it is, but it's also, like, quite simplistic in nature as well. Like, it really well. This is one of the ones where I actually, the guys that made the game actually came and joined us at Tabletop Tuesday the week after UK Games Expo, so that was good to have along as well. But they've also given me a load of bonus cards, and we have some, like, really not exclusive, because, you know, it's not exclusive to us, but, like, I don't know if they've been generally available in the UK before, type thing. And they, like, sell online for a high price, and they're basically there's a load of cards with, like, Will Wheaton on from a tabletop,
never heard of him,
International Tabletop Day a few years ago, and I don't know if they've been generally available in this country. They may have been in other places, but you cannot buy them generally, and we have a load of them to give away on the night for anyone. I want to make sure they go to a good home, so we'll be giving them out as prizes as we normally do, but then there'll also be some other prizes throughout the night to anyone that can basically prove to me that they're a fan of the game. But yeah, we've got loads of them to give out as well, and I want to give most of them out this week, so it'd be a good one to come along for. And for anyone that doesn't know, each and every week we have a different feature game, and if you play that feature game that evening, you have a chance of winning a copy of that game at the end of the night. So not only can you win a copy of the game this week, but you can also win some extra exclusive cards to go with it. There are more details on the site on bigredbarrel.com, or you can come join our Meetup group and search for Tabletop Tuesday on Meetup. Also should point out that, yeah, basically, anyone doesn't know, it's in the loading bar in Dalston, and we are there each and every week with a new game, but this one is a good one not to be missed, so this would be a good week to come and join us.
Okay, and next week will be our episode 300 of Big Red Barrel UK.
300, Coleman!
300, episode 300 of Big Red Barrel
UK. I thought you said this was the last ever episode.
I lied. I wanted the attention. Oh, now I've got your attention, let me tell you about episode 300, brother. So we're going to do a 300th episode. We don't fully know what we're doing, but hopefully it's going to be...
Never stopped us before, Coleman.
Don't expect the kind of razzmatazz we threw out for 250. That was halfway to 500, so I think that's very special. 300.
It's a round number, Coleman.
I think 400's a bigger celebration. But anyway, yeah, so we did a big 250 thing. We're going to do something completely different for 300, hopefully. It's going to be different from your normal format. But yeah, so if you want to get your shout outs in for a monumental episode, then you'll probably want to do that on iTunes, the forums, Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube. So this week we got some shout outs on Twitter, especially. All the others, none. But Tim, who has shouted us out on Twitter, please?
Before I jump into that, and before.
Then Tim doesn't want to say anything.
Before
okay.
I forget. No, I'm just going to shout out my other podcast, Coleman.
No,
my
you can do that later. Podcast. You've ruined the flow, Tim. Oh. I said do a thing and you said no. You can't do it.
How many podcasts are we podcast together with now, Coleman? Should be useless. Anyway, okay. Right. I would like to thank from the Twitters Norman? No, it's not Norman. No man was here. Is that a thing? No man was here?
And the rest?
I was just getting confused by that person's name, okay? Haven't heard it before. Anyway, also Mr. Mark Fraser. The one and only lovely Nelly and Bamford.
And Andy Baines, Sekinder, Richie Kirkybum, and Lee Hodgson from the Ready Player 2 podcast. Go give them a listen. They're very good.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, we have Richie on this podcast.
Now before. Can I plug my other podcast?
Now you can plug your cocking episode.
Woo! Look at you with
well,
your
I was going
to
lead in nicely because I was going to say Lee Hodgson is one of the more heavily influenced VR people I know.
Good.
So you might want to look into him for maybe an episode of VRB.
Oh, you've got to ruined it now. I don't get to say it.
Do it.
For anyone that doesn't know, myself, Diamed, and the lovely Kev, that is also known as Credith, have launched a VR podcast, imaginatively titled by the one and only Dan, VRB. And yeah, it's our VR podcast. It'll be me confined to talking about VRB in a safe space where other people care about VR. I know Coleman doesn't hate VR, but still. But yeah, it's helped keep Dan sane and also give me a chance to chat about VR at length. And yeah, get some other people and other views on VR as well. We won't be doing it weekly, but it'll probably be every 2 weeks or so. Basically, the pilot episode that we already put out on the Big Red Barrelcast feed is up on iTunes now, and is kind of just was just testing the waters for us, putting that up to kind of make sure that the iTunes feed and everything worked nicely, but the new episode should be up this week, so go and subscribe to that now and it'll drop in your inboxes when you do so. That it doesn't drop in your inboxes, I just lied, but yeah, you'll get to notify when the first episode goes live. I think we had fun doing it. Should be a good episode, should be a good one to get on. But the pilot episode, if you haven't listened to that, is available now as well, so you can go download and listen to that. Yeah, and come hear us talk about VR at length and help keep Mr. Dan sane so that he doesn't have to listen to me talk about VR.
Good. Okay, that's everything.
That's your lot.
Okay, so for this episode of Big Red Barrel UK podcast, episode 299, I have been Coleman.
I might have been Tim.
And until next time, where we return for episode 300, a goodbye.
Good.
your ears are quite welcome for the podcasting goodness that you just heard. Why not roll on over to BigRedBarrel.com for more podcasts, news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.